086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. Right, okay, we're joined on the programme now by Dr. Gerard Rorty. Actually, we're not joined on the programme now by Dr. Gerard Rorty. He'll be joining us in a moment. Just some of your comments here. What are those affected by defective blocks looking for? If half a million isn't good enough, then what is? They're looking for their homes to be returned to the previous state that they were before a lack of oversight and poor products completely and utterly destroyed their homes, I think. Right, Dr. Gerard Rorty joins us on the show now. Good morning to you, Doctor. Thanks for your time, as always.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good. Now, everyone, anyone who knows you or has heard you on this programme knows you're incredibly passionate about the provision of a veterinary school here in the Northwest. And there's been some developments in that regard of late.
There's been considerable developments. There's no public announcement yet, but ATU, Letterkenny, Mount Bellew are getting a vet school. I've seen some HEA documents yesterday and we're absolutely over the moon about that. So that's a great development. It's a tremendous boost for ATU. We have to take off our hats to them. They did a really, really good bid. But it's going to be a massive, massive boost to Irish farmers, but Donegal farmers in particular. I mean, Joe Sweeney and myself have talked, Joe Sweeney of the AFA talked the last time we were on your programme about how difficult it is to retain vets in Donegal. When we had Donegal Animal Hospital, we had just a succession of foreign vets who didn't want to stay in Donegal. And with the succession of vets didn't want to work with cattle and sheep. So this is a great announcement, or it's coming up as an announcement. It's a great development for Donegal.
Just in relation, how sure are we? Because I was just in anticipation of you coming on, I was checking out the Limerick Live website down there, and their headline is talks are ongoing with a view to opening a school of veterinary medicine at the University of Limerick. It comes after a delegation of animal care professionals held meetings with the college's top brass. You probably know Dr. James Quinn and Dr. Ian Fleming. They've decades of experience as vets. They seem to still think that UL's in the running.
No, I have in front of me, and I've provided to you in confidence, some documents that was leaked to me from the HEA yesterday, where the provost of Limerick officially withdraws their bid. Wow. Limerick are out and they're gone. And good riddance, because as someone who supported initially the Limerick bid, it was a good bid. I am just disgusted with the degree of corruption that has been highlighted in Limerick University.
So just to be clear, you're able to confirm this morning that Donegal has been successful, ATU has been successful, and a veterinary school will be established here in the Northwest, and it has yet to be announced.
Yeah, the documents I'm looking in front of me confirm that the provost of Limerick has withdrawn their bid, and ATU are now the preferred bidder. And Minister McConnell-Oak has at all stages thrown his weight really behind the idea of regional balance. So it's incredibly positive. What's a difficult and what's going to be challenging for us in the veterinary profession is that we actually wanted more than one vet school. So I might have referred to in the past that the fact that there's over 200 vets go on the register in the Irish register every year from outside of Ireland. We were hoping from, you know, I speak now not from a Donegal perspective, but from, you know, a national perspective, we were hoping that we were going to get the capacity Limerick brought as well, which was 90 places. ATU is a bid for 40 places. CTU is a bid for 40 places. UCD for an expansion of 45 places. So whilst it's tremendous news that ATU will get the vet school, I think now the president and ATU and our staff are probably going to have to go back and revisit their bid with a view to actually expanding the number of places they're going to be able to provide.
Yeah, because there's already a degree course there in Letterkenny, isn't there, in veterinary nursing? So it's a case of now getting this veterinary school, vetting school, whatever it might be called, but being more ambitious in the absence now of UL.
They're going to be, yeah. But listen, the fact that they can put together such a comprehensive bid that HEA have approved for 40 places, there's no reason at all why they can't upscale it to 80 or 90 places. The one thing, though, I would call on Minister McConnell to do today, given that he has approved it, is actually let's get a public announcement out, because the number of farmers' daughters and sons who have been contacting me and are saying, you know, we want to do veterinary. Are we going to have to go to Poland next year? Are we going to have to go to Budapest? Are we going to have to go to Warsaw? And for somebody to actually get a vet school up and going, they need to get, you know, a lead-in time of 1 to 2 years. And certainly if we're going to have any hope of admissions for 2025 in ATU, the announcement needs to come in the next few weeks. The difficulty that we have is, as you referred to the Limerick leader yesterday, Patrick O'Donovan, the Fine Gael Minister for Higher Education, is a Limerick man and has been fighting tooth and nail to hold on to the bid for Limerick. But I think the fact that we've now a Garda investigation into how 5.2 million was wasted by in 20 houses by Limerick University has totally ruled them out.
So do you then see this as a successful conclusion, albeit with a increase in spaces being applied for? Do you see this then as a red letter day? This is the end then of a campaign that you, for the most part, I think publicly at least, has been the leading voice on it. Is this that red letter success day?
I think so. But let's go back to the actual bid. While I've been voicing support, and IFA have been very, very active. Joe Sweeney and the president of the IFA and the local IFA have been very active lobbying as well. You can only back a good horse when the horse is worth backing. And you have to take your hat off. The bid that came in from ATU was worth backing. And when the HEA looked at it, I've referred to it in the past that this was going to be a political decision. But it's still, politicians can only back someone of calibre and of something of merit. And they can only back as well a university that has governance. So that's the other aspect that you have to take off your hat for ATU, that they've had good governance. Which Limerick University unfortunately hasn't had. You know, we haven't had a situation in ATU where they've got out and paid double the money for the asking price for 20 houses as they did in Limerick, which led to the criminal investigation, which led to the collapse of their bid.
All right. And who do you believe is privy to this information outside of you, me and the listeners now in terms of ATU's successes? Do you believe ATU have been notified?
I can't comment. Obviously, I can't comment. But all that I know at this stage, they're bound to realise, given that the number one competitor, Limerick, is now out, and Limerick had a bid for 90 places, and that the minister has really, really put the shoulder to the wheel to back ATU, that ATU hopefully will get a public announcement sometime in the next few weeks. CTU are back on the race again, the Waterford bid, but again, they've only got 40 places. And they didn't have the degree of political support that we have.
Right. OK, well, we'll watch on with interest. Thanks so much for the update. I really do appreciate it. Dr. Gerard Rorty there, and just referencing that case, the University of Limerick confirmed it lost 5.2 million after paying inflated prices for 20 houses. UL President Kirsten May said independent valuations have confirmed that the university paid significantly above market price for the properties. In a letter sent to students and staff, she said, "This is an issue of major concern for the university in terms of management, governance and reputation. The Dáil's Public Accounts Committee has been examining financial issues at the university over recent years, and UL reps are due before the committee, or maybe they have already appeared on it." So that was the case that Dr. Gerard Rorty referenced, but he seems to be of the view that ATU has been successful in that, and that now if the announcement is made public and the ATU seeks more places, that, and he didn't seem to rule it out, that people could be in veterinary school here in the Northwest or at ATU in quite large numbers, up to 80 or 90 perhaps, by 2025, albeit maybe that an ambitious target. The march tonight, says a listener, will achieve nothing. There needs to be a march in Dublin to demand what they want. This march will not get any national media coverage. It's useless and not fair on those in Letterkenny. Protest is protest, though. I mean, these people feel they have to do something. And the key Fianna Fáil figures are in the clannery this evening. And it's been a funny day in terms of news and what have you. Funny week, sorry, in terms of uncertainty and anxiety. So people feel there's something that they have to do. The planned protest could turn out to be a disastrous PR for the defective bloc protesters, says another listener. All it would take is one instance of an emergency vehicle being delayed and the protesters would become pariahs. The chosen route leaves no options to accommodate emergency vehicles. My advice would be, in the interests of safety, to call it off or select an alternative route. But the hotel is located where it is located. Have these homeowners not contacted their insurance companies? After all, what do we pay insurance for? Well, you might ask, what do we pay insurance for? What do we pay other levies to the state and council for? It's for protection, for to ensure there's proper oversight, to ensure there's proper regulation, to ensure there's proper inspections, to ensure that if your house fails, that you're not liable for it, that your insurance company is. That's the whole controversy here. That's what it's all about. Banks aren't responsible. Insurance companies aren't responsible. Material suppliers are hard to find responsible in financial terms in any case. This is why we're here. And all the while, there would be an expectation on local authorities in the state to ensure products were produced to a certain standard, that there was an inspection, that that was enforced, that there had been on-site inspections, and on it goes. That is the entire crux of the controversy.
The county's number one talk show, The 9 Till Noon Show on Highland Radio. The 9 Till Noon Show is brought to you by Letterkenny Credit Union, offering low-rate car loans with fast approval. Apply online at letterkennycu.ie or in office today.
Has your child recently started school? Donegal County Library, in partnership with First Five, a whole-of-government strategy to improve the lives of babies, young children and their families, is here to support this big step. Visit your local library and you can pick up a free little library book bag and their very own library card. There's one for every child starting school, available now at your local library, an initiative of the Government of Ireland in association with Libraries Ireland and Donegal County Library.
FinHarps will look to continue their great recent form when they host Longford Town at Finn Park this Friday. With just three home games left, home support could make all the difference as Harps look to push for a playoff position. That's FinHarps against Longford Town at Finn Park this Friday at 7:45. Tickets available at finharps.ie. This ad is kindly sponsored by Highland Bakery, your number one local bakery.
Acres payment fiasco continues. For more in your Irish Farmers Journal, here's Paul Mooney.
We reveal which farmers are the latest victims of the department's ongoing payment delays. We have all the details on the new bonus being paid by factories for Angus cattle, further fall in suckler numbers, huge demand for hill sheep. We have the latest in straw prices, plus Dumas our free Ploughing 24 magazine with all you need to know for next week.
All inside this week's Irish Farmers Journal. You cannot afford to miss it.
Discover a new standard in healthcare at Greenview Medical Centre Letterkenny. For routine checkups or urgent concerns, Greenview Medical Centre offers children's consultations, referrals, prescriptions and specialised male and female healthcare. Don't wait to get the care you deserve. Book now at greenviewmedicalcentre.ie or call 074 920 2070. Early morning and late evening appointments available. Greenview Medical Centre, Riverside Retail Park, Letterkenny. A new health horizon.
Highland Radio Time Checks, brought to you by Airgrid, the operator and developer of Ireland's electricity grid. Airgrid, powering up communities, powering up Ireland. The time is...
It's 11:19, just turning 20 past 11. You're very welcome back to the programme. Right, if I mentioned to you palliative care, and it's what we're going to talk about now as part of Palliative Care Week, if I talk to you about a palliative care... How does it make you feel? Does it make you feel worried? Does it make you feel reassured? Do you have a full understanding of who receives palliative care, for how long, why? Well, let's try and answer a lot of those questions. And many were answered in a survey. The CEO of the All-Ireland Institute of Hospice and Palliative Care is Karen Charmley. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning, Greg.
Thank you so much for joining us. Okay, so what was the purpose of this survey, Karen?
We've conducted the survey to inform Palliative Care Week 2024. And what we found in the survey is that more than half of adults feel fearful when they hear the term palliative care. And we obviously understand that there's a lot of apprehension around palliative care, which is understandable when we think about potentially needing to avail of those services, either for ourselves or for those closest to us. You know, we know that it's a difficult to think about, but what we're really wanting to do during the week is encourage individuals and communities to learn more about palliative care and how it supports quality of life by meeting people's physical, social, spiritual and emotional needs.
I think if you asked people to explain palliative care a different way, they might say it's end-of-life care. That's perhaps not necessarily inaccurate, but it perhaps doesn't tell the full picture either.
No, palliative care, you know, obviously, and as many of your listeners will know, you know, often is delivered at in those final days, final hours of someone's life, but it is much more than that. So from the point of diagnosis onwards, if people's symptoms need, say, for example, pain control, those services can be brought in to support people. It may be that people had accessed the services, you know, respite care, or, you know, as an outpatient in daycare services. And palliative care can also be delivered in people's homes, nursing homes and in hospitals too.
Yeah, it meets a lot of needs from, you know, physical to spiritual and everything in between.
Yeah, it's that kind of holistic care. So I suppose very much looking at the person and what needs they have, and then the services look how they can be met. So it's that kind of holistic care, you know, yeah.
I was going to say we all hope we won't need palliative care, or maybe we all hope we will be able to avail of palliative care. I suppose it's all subjective and it's not really the right way of putting it. But what I'm trying to think of, or what I'm trying to get to, is how much should we be thinking about it? Or is there any elements of palliative care that we can plan, you know, during our healthy years? Or is it just better to have an understanding of what's there?
We very much encourage people to have an understanding of what palliative care is. So, you know, if they need to avail it of themselves or if their loved one needs to avail of it. But also what we want to do is encourage people to have those conversations with their loved ones about if the need arises, where would they want to be cared for? Because often maybe people leave it till when they have an illness or to when they're very ill, you know, those conversations, the opportunity to have those conversations may be missed. So we very much suggest that people think ahead, and there are resources such as the Irish Hospice Foundation's Think Ahead form, which will give people prompts about some of those things that they might think about in advance of becoming ill.
And do you think there's maybe we could have more understanding as to when you might qualify or it might be beneficial to access palliative care?
I think, like palliative care is there for people with advanced cancer, advanced heart, lung, kidney disease, neurological conditions such as MND and dementia as well. What we suggest is if people are unsure about whether they need palliative care, to have those discussions with their GP, the public health nurse, their consultants that they're in contact with.
But we're good, aren't we, in terms of... We have a good network, aren't we, in terms of the GPs know what's what and other care providers know what's what. You know, thankfully, that's a framework we have in place, isn't it? It's just a case of maybe having the right conversation to know where to be, when the right time to be signposted is.
Exactly. And those professionals, you know, and there are resources to support professionals in kind of signposting into palliative care services as well, you know, such as, for example, Donegal Hospice.
So just over half of adults in the Republic feel fearful when they hear the term palliative care. And I think that can be for a number of reasons. Like some people fear their demise. For others, it's maybe not fully understanding what it is. But the majority of people, and in some cases, you know, the overwhelming majority of people, have a very positive outlook to what palliative care is, what it means.
And yeah, and that's very encouraging that there is that understanding of palliative care. And I suppose for us, you know, it's great news, but there is more to do in terms of raising awareness and there's more to do in terms of how we support the future development of those services.
Covered that in this conversation or can you outline what gaps need to be filled there?
I suppose there's always, and there's been a new, the Department of Health launched the new National Adult Palliative Care Policy. I have a copy of it here on my desk.
Of course you do.
look at it, it's marked. So they launched that on Tuesday, and it's great to see that that's been launched with its focus on ensuring that palliative care is delivered in the right place, with the right people at the right time. And it's great to see that there is a commitment to further investment in the future development of palliative care services. But also as part of that policy, there is around, you know, supports for the public and supports for family carers and how we support compassionate communities. So how we support communities to support people with life-limiting conditions as well. And there's lots of initiatives that are already taking place, but it's how do we do more of that as well?
Yeah, and we've had to learn a lot because people are, you know, we're very complex and we might be dealing with, you know, heading towards the end of our time and some people might worry about, you know, what the consequences of it on other people. Others might have questions about what happens next or, you know, does my last confession cover me? And I'm not being facetious in that, but all this stuff obviously does come up and it requires, you know, a high level of knowledge and care and training to be able to, obviously you don't want to lead people in certain views or what have you, but to understand all the complexities of issues that might come up in this situation.
Yeah, and I think the real push is for many health and social care professionals, you know, as part of their, say, undergraduate training programs, you know, palliative care is covered. And obviously then as people specialise, they receive additional training and education around palliative care. But obviously, you know, some of those discussions are skilled, but I think we shouldn't just have it that it is only specialist palliative care that can, obviously, you know, there's many GPs and public health nurses and consultants that can support people with those conversations too.
A caller says, at the end of life, does palliative care speed up death? I mean, it's about, isn't it? It's a bit of people being, you know, comfortable and well cared for in the time leading up to their passing.
Yeah, and at times there is that kind of myth that palliative care, but actually research has found that early integration of palliative care can actually, you know, can actually add to people's life. So I think it is that by managing people's pain, you know, their physical symptoms, their social, emotional and spiritual needs, really the focus is on maintaining that quality of life and meaning that people with advanced, you know, serious and progressive illnesses, that they can continue to do the things that are important to them, you know, meeting with family, meeting with friends, doing their hobbies. And that's the focus.
And as someone asks, how long can someone be in palliative care? Well, you've kind of answered that, can't you? It is. Go ahead. Yes.
Yeah, and at times it can be like we have one of our volunteer members there. I'm sure you wouldn't mind me talking of him. He has a cancer diagnosis. He had an operation. He was discharged into palliative care, into a hospice service. He was an inpatient. Then he was discharged into community palliative care services. And then he was discharged from those services. He's still receiving chemotherapy, but he knows that when the need arises, the palliative care services will be there to support him. So, you know, I suppose as part of our messaging and around the week is that palliative care can be there for years. It can be just there for the days as well, but it's people maybe access respite services. So going in for a short stay in a hospice, having the symptoms managed. So again, an example that comes to mind is someone who a gentleman who'd given up his car because he wasn't able to drive. He accessed respite services and he was able to drive again and make the most of the time that he had.
And I think your examples are very useful, but also we are very complex individual people and there's so many different variables of conditions or disease or whatever it might be. And that's where the importance of sort of engaging with your trusted health professional, your GP or what have you, ensures that people people get the right care at the right time rather than whataboutery, because everyone's so different.
Yeah, and that's why that engagement with professionals and making sure that people, but I think it's people feeling, having that understanding about palliative care, what it is, and then feeling able to ask, well, could it be a benefit for me?
Okay. Just in that regard, like, do you think there are people listening who maybe don't have a full understanding of some of the supports that might be available? You know, maybe they don't think it applies to them, or they don't qualify. What is the best way for them to get more information and to find out, you know, if there are supports they could avail of, be it respite or personal care or whatever it might be, Karen?
What I'd suggest on that is, obviously, their point of contact being their health professionals they're in contact with. But also, we have a website, www.thepalliativehub.com, where we have a lot of materials around Palliative Care Week. For example, we've got videos of people who've accessed services. You know, we've had gentleman Brendan who's accessing services in Galway Hospice Foundation, and it kind of shows how he's benefited. So sometimes they're quite short videos, just two or three minutes. So they're really useful way. There's also videos of volunteers and the like. So different ways people have, but also on our thepalliativehub.com, we've links to our suite of websites that have information. So we've the Palliative Hub Adults, which has lots of information for people with life-limiting conditions and their families. And it also signposts to other sources of useful information, be it the local hospice, be it HSC, be it the Irish Hospice Foundation, Irish Cancer Society as well, you know, a wide range of useful sources of information.
Yeah, and I think this has been a useful source of information too. Palliative Care Week, the theme being Palliative Care Week, You, Me and Palliative Care, runs to the 14th of September, right in the middle of it now. Thank you so much for joining us, Karen. I do appreciate it.
Thank you very much,
Greg. Bye-bye. That is Karen Charmley there, CEO of the All-Ireland Institute of Hospice and Palliative Care. Any views on that conversation? 08660 25000. This is my last opportunity to give this a mention. It is Irish Music Month, and we have our four finalists. One of these acts will be announced tomorrow as representing Highland Radio in the next round of this very exciting competition that offers recording contracts, support for music, and so much more besides. Our first finalist, I'm going back in reverse order this time, The Afades, and that's their track, Giving Out. And they are a fantastic foursome. Here's a fantastic individual. Owen Ferry, this is his track, Miss You. If you like this, if you like Owen, if you think he could be the face of Irish music going forward, go onto our website and click the Irish Music Month link and vote for him. Well, maybe you think it's 16-year-old Zoe McCauley. She's a singer-songwriter. This is her track, Wait and See.
About every place I've been, 'cause I'm just a girl with a dream. 'Cause we're just people floating along.
That's Zoe McCauley there. You can see her performing live in On Green on Theatre last Friday on the voting section of the website, as you can these guys.
Take it up to us.
Tessio, and this is
Hanging
on My Back.
It's gonna be something.
So which one of those is your favourite? Which one do you want to represent Highland Radio as part of the Local Hero Irish Music Month competition? One of them will go and be selected, of course, and then go into a final of 21 acts, and then six of those 21 acts go into a grand final. We'd love one of those four in that six. Okay, it's emerged that the Rescue 118 helicopter is having to land more than 3 kilometres away from Letterkenny University Hospital because of, we're told, health and safety concerns. To discuss this, we're joined on the programme by Councillor Gerry McMonagle. Good morning, Councillor. Good morning, Gerry. Thanks for your time today.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, so what do you know about this story?
Well, it caught my attention, and there was a report, the Bunbury Coast Guard, that had to intervene and help a lady, and then she was transported then from the coast and the 118 to Letterkenny. And it said that in the report that they landed at the Letterkenny airfield and then was transferred to the ambulance and then on to the hospital. And that got me, well, that's happened here. And I made a few inquiries, and then I heard that the helipad was out of action due to concerns around health and safety. And they were having to land at what we know locally as Stevenson Field and transfer the patients then onto an ambulance. So I made inquiries to the hospital, and I've since heard that yes, the helipad is due to lighting and a couple of other issues, was out of action for the 118 Coast Guard helicopter, but that they hope they have it back up and running in the next couple of days.
So, and this is essential, isn't it, Jerry? Because the great advantage of the helicopter is to get people often from more remote areas or even not remote areas, but very, very quickly to the hospital. And the idea then that they have to be disembarked and passed over to an ambulance for a 3 kilometre drive into Letterkenny, it doesn't fully defeat the purpose, but it certainly compromises the great advantage of the helicopter to some extent.
Yeah, it does. And it also, there's transfers from the hospital, emergency transfers from the hospital to maybe major hospitals in Dublin or in Galway. Yeah. And it compromises that to a certain extent as well, because they have to be taken out to an airfield and put on the 118 and then taken there. Now, the hospital has informed me that the Army, for some reason, was still able to land at the helipad, which, you know, begs the question, well, you know, how is that? But it's still, you know, the main question is, look, here's a helipad. It's in regular use. I live beside the hospital. I mean, night and day, there's journeys in and out of it, people being brought in, people being transferred. And so you like to think that the helipad would be an important part of the infrastructure there, that it would be looked after, and that if there was any problems with lights, I've heard that there's other problems as well, that they would be looked after and a competent person would be responsible for that.
The fact that, you know, it seems that the Irish Coast Guard had to make the decision, it does talk to, well, what is the maintenance plan or the inspection rate of the helipad, and do the boxes that need to be ticked on site match, you know, what the Irish Coast Guard want? Do you get where I'm coming from? Like, we don't want this to happen again. It would be great if it's resolved in the days ahead, but there's something missing in this story that I would love to know what the answer to it is.
Yeah, and that's where I'm coming from too, and that's the questions that, you know, I've corresponded to the hospital management and asked them, you know, the reasons why. I got a response back there this morning to say that, yeah, look, the Army can still land there, that the 118 Coast Guard helicopter is not, and it's due to some lights being out, but we hope to have it on back tomorrow again. You know, it's short and sweet, there's no explanation, but you would like to think such an important piece of infrastructure like the helipad that would be regularly checked. You would ensure that everything is as it should be, that all the safety component parts and that there are working and are fit for purpose to allow helicopters to come in. And it could happen any time or day or night. Mm-hmm. We know that. And thank God that service is there and they do a fantastic job. So, look, maybe the eye was taken off the ball, I don't know, but it'll do no harm to remind them of the importance of this service and of making regular checks and ensuring that it's fit for purpose at all times.
Yeah, okay, we'll keep an eye on it. As I say, we just don't want to go down this route again because there's lots of questions. But listen, we appreciate you. You can only go with the information that they provide you, so we appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg.
Councillor Jay McMonagall there confirming that they hope to have, the hospital hopes to have, the health and safety requirements met in the days ahead. It's crazy, isn't it? A helicopter could land 3 kilometres from the hospital. Apparently, the health and safety inspection was ordered after a recent security breach at the hospital. Again, I'm not 100% sure what that might mean. Some of your comments coming in here. I took a family member home from hospital a few years ago who was told about a palliative care team. There was no team. We saw a palliative care nurse once a week. It did not enhance ours or the sick person's life. I was very disappointed in the palliative care team. The reality of palliative care is very different in your experience, and not to take away from it in any way, shape or form, but I know a lot of people would have different experiences, but it's important that all experiences are heard as well. A caller believes a silent vigil around the Clannery Hotel and its vicinity would be more effective and safer than all this driving around and causing traffic chaos. This would ensure more support, empathy and a willingness to get behind the campaign. That's a protest that's taking place this evening. Greg, could you please point out that we're not all getting $500,000 to rebuild our houses. This is one of the problems. The whole country thinks we're getting huge sums when in reality we're not. And sorry, yes, I presumed that that was a given and I didn't reference it in the comment because of the other stuff that was contained within the comment. And no one's making money out of this. I think that's clear. By the way, a sum of money was handed into the Bank of Ireland in Letterkenny yesterday at 3 p.m. It was coming from the ATM. You can call into the Bank of Ireland Letterkenny if you believe it to be yours. So a good Samaritan found some money at the ATM or in thereabouts, and it's been handed into the Bank of Ireland. So if that's yours, hopefully you'll have a receipt or you'll know how much you withdrew or if you took out of the bank or whatever it might be, and your figure could match that. So hopefully that bit of good news. That could be a bit of good news for someone. Got this letter in from a fan of the show. Thank you for it, Rose. It reads as follows. I was getting ready for Mass and putting money into the priest's envelope when my son said to me, I hope that money's not going to pay for abuse, i.e. address for abuse victims. Greg, can you find out where our weekly money goes and where will the money come from to compensate the victims? I'm only holding on to my religion and Mass attendance by my fingertips. None of my adult children attend church. When will all these scandals end? What will be the scandal in 50 years' time where all you can do is hope and if it's your thing, pray that we've learned enough lessons now that safeguards are in place to ensure something like this can never happen again. Where will any redress come from? We don't know, because that is yet to be determined. And there's a long process to go through in relation to that. As it relates to your weekly collections, I presume it goes to support the parish, more generally speaking. There are lots of questions that maybe you could ask your local parish priest about, and I'm not being facetious in that at all. I hope you understand. But where's the money going to come for any redress? That is yet to be determined. I presume it'll be a mixture of state and some of these orders or institutions. That's not been determined yet. But I would hope that the money you're donating now goes to the support of the parish and you're availing of those supports in attending Mass and getting whatever comfort or security you do from that. If anyone else has any firmer information on that, please let me know and I'll be happy to pass it on to that listener through the airwaves. Did many people watch the programme on TG Cahir last night about young people not being able to build on their land? There should be uproar that young local people are not allowed to build on their land or land belonging to their parents. It's driving people out to high-rise flats away from the countryside where they grew up. I didn't watch that show, but it's something, and I referenced it literally today as it relates to the County Development Plan and the National Development Plan, which dictates an awful lot of this stuff, i.e., not being able to build on your land if there's another house available within a certain period of time or having no accesses out onto the N56 or whatever it might be. So we're acutely aware of the issues on this show. It's good to see TG Cahir giving it some attention. I didn't see the show, so I can't add anything further to that. Just for the other side of the story, as it relates to palliative care, my mother was under palliative care for the last few months of her life and we couldn't praise or thank the palliative care team enough for their care, advice and help. Their care was amazing. Right, Liam joins me now. Hi, Liam.
Hello there.
Good to chat to you. You're of the view there aren't enough skate parks in the Northwest, and it is a sport that is growing in popularity, as seen in the recent Olympics and what have you. You're a skater yourself, Liam?
Yes.
All right, okay. So there is a skate park in Letterkenny. You believe there should be more elsewhere. Tell us about that.
Oh, absolutely. If you really look at like a map of the skate parks, at the moment. In the northeast, there's like a pocket of skate parks there and Antrim. And then if you look at the lakes of Tyrone or Fermanagh, and even Armagh, I believe, and then even Donegal, there's no facilities. And even what we do have in Letterkenny, it's not to an entry level. Like, I've kids there, and both my daughters skate, one of which who would be a competitive skateboarder, and she doesn't like to go to Letterkenny, so we need to go to the likes of Ballymena or Port Rush, where they have like a DIY setup. And so it's always like an hour and a half, 2 hour journey for her to participate in the sport that she loves, you know.
What do you see the problem with the one in Letterkenny? Is it it's the condition? Is it the, I suppose, the ramps and jumps or facilities, or what needs to be improved there?
Well, it's just, you know, it's pretty old now. It hasn't been maintained to the best of conditions. The surface is becoming just, you know, a bit of a liability. Yeah. The ramps, the transitions of the ramps aren't right. Everything's kind of packed in. Like, you know, I don't think it was, I don't think that it was a specific skate park design team that were brought on to do that project when it was done. And it has been changed throughout the years at the beginning of it, but it's just not to the standard. You know, if any kids want to set their aspirations towards being an Olympian skateboarder, the facilities aren't there to nourish that, you know.
And when you talk about going to Ballymena, is that a public skate park or private or...?
No, it's a council funded a public skate park, and it would be the closest one. The Letterkenny as well, I would believe. But to where I'm from, Strabane, I skated, and so I took off on Saturday morning, and I pushed from there to the top of the Glen Sheen, and then the following day I started off in the Glen Sheen again and pushed off until Ballymena Skate Park, so it took me 2 days to get there. Mm-hmm. And the reason I've done that is because, you know, and those skate parks, like further northeast, those who are interested in urban sports, they have the privilege of just a short distance, either be a skate, cycle, taxi, run, or whatever. But I just wanted to highlight what it actually takes if I just wanted to take a casual skate to the closest skate park.
And skating, you know, can be inline skates, can't it? Or a skateboard? I don't know what your daughter's interested in. What discipline of skating is she into?
Skateboarding. Right. Yeah. She's only 9 years of age, and she's won 3 competitions so far: first, second, third, and different competitions.
And she got that love of that from you, was it, Liam? Yeah.
No, we were staying in Bundoran one time, and I had a longboard. I was just kind of cruising around a longboard, and she had a wee pair of Wellingtons on, and she just hopped on it, and it just seemed, she just knew what to do. And I was like, "Figure, there's something here." So that's where
you hit the jackpot. That's what happened. There. Yeah, brilliant. But you would see, obviously. Listen, she's already showing such potential at 9. If the facilities were there, who's to say? And in fairness, now. You know, you can be quite young representing the country in the Olympics as well. You know, time potentially could be short to harness talent, young local talent here.
Absolutely. But the youngest Olympian in the female contest in the skateboarding this year was 11. The That's average remarkable. Age was 15.
Yeah.
And the oldest was 51. Yeah. You know, but if you're thinking of 11, there needs to be... You know, they need to be training for like 3 or 4 years to get to that standard, and the facilities just simply are not there for, you know, to initiate that passion and the kids. And it's something like, you know, years ago, like at any given weekend, like, you know, even in Letterkenny, because I go to Letterkenny quite a lot, either Letterkenny or Strabane or Derry, you know, there's an abundance of skaters, and only for the private skate park there, Derry City Skate Park, there'd be nowhere to go.
You see, because not everyone, and we're talking obviously people that are capable of, you know, physical exertion in this manner, but not everyone likes football, soccer, rugby, tennis, badminton. Do you know what I mean? And some might even argue whether skating's a sport or not. That argument has been lost at this point, because clearly it is. But you know, it's we talk about what our children could do that doesn't revolve around drink, for an example, and outside of sort of the, in inverted commas, the mainstream sports, there's not a ton of stuff to do that doesn't cost a fortune. So I can see the strong argument as this is another option, another outlet for sporty kids that maybe aren't into the ball sports.
Well, this is it. And you mentioned it there too. You know, at a, as in comparison to the more mainstream sports, skateboarding and other urban sports as at the lowest of the cost over a 12-month period.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you can see that, yeah.
Yeah, you could argue a lot. You know the benefits of skateboarding and it outweighs any of the negative aspects that could be. Like, you know, I know a lot of parents and stuff would say to me about like kids falling over and injuring themselves, but we are at that point now where, you know, the coaching has become more widely available and like kids are getting the opportunity to be taught like there's a proper way to fall, believe it or not, like, you know, and so that becomes part of the program.
But
you know?
Also with life there is risk and sometimes that's what makes it exciting. But no, I take your point. All right, Liam, listen, keep in touch. It's an interesting conversation. Great to get an insight too into how your daughter picked it up, and let's hope sometime in the not too distant future we're cheering her on at the Olympics. Liam, thank you.
Thanks very much.
All right, take care of yourself. Thanks so very much indeed. All right, that was Thursday's 9 till noon show. Thanks very much to Donna Marie Doherty, researching and producing, ably assisted by Shannon Wilkin as well. We're all going to be back with you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. We have our Friday panel, we have That's Entertainment, and we have the winner of the Local Irish Music Month competition. That's going to be announced on the show tomorrow, that and so much more besides. So please stay tuned. Don't forget, if you're listening to the podcast or the overnight broadcast and you want to comment on any of the issues that we've tackled or discussed today, feel free to send us an email, comments@highlandradio.com, or indeed WhatsApp or text us, and we'll pick it up for the show tomorrow. John Bresson's coming up after the news headlines at 12. But for me, Greg Hughes, and all the team here on the 9 till noon show, have a great Thursday.